The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You're joining We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And there you go. Those are all the voices you're going to hear. The other two voices you're going to hear are Scott Blackburn and Kristen Rule. And so that hogs up all of our phone lines. So I just want to let people know that at the beginning. You can join us on the chat room if you go to wethepeopleradio.us. You can click on the brown bar at the top that says click to listen and join the chat every Sunday noon to 2. If you click on that, you can send us messages and whatnot online, because I have a feeling this is going to generate lots of questions, comments, you know, that kind of stuff. So we want to make sure we have good ways to communicate. Okay, hold on here. My computer decided to mug me and do an update. Super handy. Let's see. We're here live every Sunday from noon to 2. What other housekeeping do we have? We have been airing in the Philadelphia, New Jersey market on WNJC 1360 AM between, I think it's 3 and 4:30 Saturdays?
3:30 to 5.
3:30 to 5. It keeps changing. Okay, I'll just... It's on Saturday at some point in time.
3:30 to 5 Eastern time, yeah, on Saturday.
Just find it there. And we will have a commercial-free archive of this program up by about... an hour and a half after the show, so you can send this to your friends. Because we're talking about the VA, and I know this is going to be confusing for many of our regular listeners, we have good news from the VA. So kind of fasten your seatbelt here, and we're going to go through some things that are really exciting that are going to actually help our veterans. And it isn't just a bunch of happy talk. It's actually going to get things done with people who know how to do that. So the first person I'd like to introduce is Kristen Rule, because we've had her on before. She has been, let's see, do we dare call her a perennial whistleblower? Kristen's been ratting out the VA since, I think, what'd you tell me, Kristen, 2010?
That's when I sent my first email, yes.
It all starts with an email, doesn't it? So, okay, so tell us how you got involved in from there to here, because I think that's important. You bring a lot of credibility to the information, because people know that, I mean, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to lie for them, obviously.
Yeah, this has been one of the best experiences since I've joined the VA in 2007, and I must credit General Hickey for telling me about this great program, because she is the one that told me that this existed at the VA and suggested that maybe I apply for one of the detail positions that they offer. So at the time that was happening, I thought it would be a good idea to maybe take a break from the Philadelphia Regional Office and see what other opportunities were out there, and the detail would be perfect because it was just temporary. So I applied, and I ended up working for something called the MyVA Task Force, and I've been there, it'll be a year in September, and I just sat back and I wanted to see what it was all about, and it's been the greatest team I've been on. Everybody works together. People want to help each other. People want to find answers and solutions. There's nothing impossible with these people. If you tell them it's impossible, they would probably say to you, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. When you decide to join our team, give us a call back, and we'll see how you can fit in. So I love it here. I've seen awesome things happening at the VA. Because of other things that are probably out in the news at the time, sometimes these things, you know, everybody doesn't know about them, so... When you guys had given me a call and said, you know, let's do an update show, I thought, well, what better than to update the veterans on these awesome things that are out there for them?
This is all part of the big overarching reform, correct?
Yeah, it's a transformation plan.
The transformation plan. And, you know, I don't think anybody, unless you've just not been paying attention, I think people are pretty aware that there needed to be a transformation plan. The bad part is, I think most people will say, well, it's just for show.
Yeah, if you've got any doubts about that, go to our webpage. We posted a document on there that kind of outlines most of the changes that are happening or in the process of happening, and it looks like some good stuff.
But Bill's first comment was, "Oh, sure, this all sounds good," and I thought, "Oh, perfect, because we need to spend the rest of the show explaining to people how this is real. So should we say hi to Scott, or do you have other things to...
Definitely.
Okay.
Scott has all the good information, so...
I just want to make sure people realize that we didn't, you know, drink some weird Kool-Aid, and so now we're just promoting something that isn't real, because that's never been our...
You did give me some Kool-Aid this morning. What was that?
It was juice.
Okay.
It was just really juice. So let's see, Scott Blackburn. I'm just gonna read your thing, Scott, because I always hate it when people say, "Well, tell me about yourself." Scott's an Army veteran. After completing ROTC at MIT, catch all that. So he went to MIT, and while he was there, he was in ROTC. Lots of letters. Scott served as an Armor and Signal Corps officer from 1999 to 2003. He was stationed at Fort Wainwright, Alaska, and deployed overseas in support of Operation Freedom. His service was cut short by a non-combat related back injury suffered in Kuwait and was medically discharged. The VA's vocational rehab program helped him attend Harvard Business School upon separation, and after graduating from Harvard in 2005, he became an associate at McKinsey & Company, the renowned worldwide management consulting firm. So this is all private industry stuff. Scott developed an expertise in turning around and transforming the culture of large, often bureaucratic Fortune 500 companies. Nobody knows anything about those. Sounds a lot like the government, though.
Mm-hmm.
He became a partner at McKinsey in 2011. And in November 2014, shortly after Bob McDonald was sworn in as Secretary of Veterans Affairs, he joined the team to lead the MyVA transformation. So you have lots of veterans in your family, and you've basically taken this on sort of as a... I guess it's not really a career move, because my guess is in private industry you're making a lot more money. So this wasn't like a bank account maneuver. This was I'm a veteran, lots of veterans in my family, the VA's messed up, they've asked me to help, and I've got the tools to do it sort of thing. That was all hyphenated, by the way. It was one giant hyphenated word. So talk to us about what kind of companies you've turned around, just so we can get some perspective.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Aaron, Bill,
or tell us whatever you want.
Kristen, thanks so much for the kind words. But you know, thank you, Aaron and Bill, for inviting me on today. You know, it's a lot of very exciting stuff going on, and very very excited to talk about it. And really appreciate you guys thinking of us. You mentioned about some of the, you know, I kind of wrote in there. I thought they were big, and I thought they were bureaucratic when I was going and transforming them. But of course, you haven't seen anything until you really dive into government, and particularly the VA. But I work primarily with industrial companies. I lived in Cleveland at the time. I worked with a lot of coal companies, with steel companies, with fertilizer companies. A lot of which were dealing with a lot of the same problems the VA was dealing. They were old and outdated and too slow, and all of a sudden they're dealing with some external market pressures that they had never seen before, with the economy going global. And a lot of them were in the in danger of being extinct. A lot of them were either acquisition targets or threatened to go bankrupt at the time. And you know, the first company I worked in was with a steel processing company in Ohio that you know, and this was in 2007, and of course in 2008 came the recession. That company would have gone bankrupt had they not really jumped in and started transforming when I got there. I loved it. I was having a great time. I loved working with these types of companies. I loved the thrill of going around into the most difficult problems and working to turn them around. And, you know, when I got a call from Bob McDonald, Bob actually happened to be on the board. Of course, Bob, who's the secretary now, was the CEO of Procter & Gamble. He sat on several corporate boards. And was on the board of one of my largest companies, which was largest clients, which was a steel company. And Bob called me up. He said, "Hey, I know you're a veteran. I know you're at McKinsey and have this expertise. How would you like to serve your country again?" And as you highlighted, this is something that's very personal for me. My service was cut short by an injury. The VA was there for me. It had been there for lots of family members in the past, and when I took a look at the news and saw what was going on in Phoenix and elsewhere, it absolutely disgusted me. And I wanted to jump in and be part of the solution rather than sit on the sideline and be one of the people just throwing stones.
See, and that's a really important distinction, because a lot of times it's somebody who's been at a lower level in government bureaucracy. They've moved up, and so they just keep perpetuating the same culture. You know, I think most of us who look at things like the VA think, gosh, if we could just get somebody in there and know something about business,
well,
you know, maybe they can
and
run it like
a business. And also get somebody in there who is a veteran and understands the problem. I think in a lot of cases, non-veteran people are in some of these positions that don't really understand what a lot of these folks have gone through. So,
I think that's a good point, too. We need to take a really quick break, otherwise we'll be behind the rest of the hour, which is what always happens because we have so many questions at the beginning. When we come back, we can go whatever direction you'd like, Scott. I know you've sent us a wonderful PowerPoint. It's called My VA Overview. It's on the website. I hope people do go there, and you can check all of this out for yourself. If you have questions or comments, you are welcome to send them to us through the chat room this afternoon if you're on. And you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be right back. You're joining We the People Radio. You can find us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us. If you're listening live on Sunday afternoon, you can find a chat room there. If you'd like to communicate with our guest or with us or anything else, you can always find contact information, also phone numbers, emails, if you would like to suggest things about the show, follow up on topics you heard, or sponsor. So, there you go. Okay, back to Scott Blackburn. Because we're talking about the VA, and it's not a bad story today. It's actually a good story. It's a program called My VA, and they've created, Kristen calls it a task force. Is it, I don't know what task force officially means, but are you guys actually VA employees, Scott, or are you consultants, or what are you?
Actually, VA employees.
Okay.
So I had to leave my my prior life and actually resigned my roles, and I signed on as a VA employee. And we have a bunch of other folks like myself that have come in from private industry at various different roles. We brought in the chief information officer from Johnson & Johnson. The chief executive from a company called Jollibee, which is the largest fast food restaurant in Asia. That gentleman was prior the president of McDonald's Europe. He's our veteran experience officer. We have people from USAA. We have folks from all different types of private sector companies that have come in as VA employees. And we're working with folks like Kristen, who have been longer time VA employees, as kind of a little bit of a unconventional SWAT team within the VA that is driving this transformation.
Well, I think most people would be really excited to hear that, because that's what they think needs to happen. You know, needs to have fresh eyes from the outside. You and I spoke about this on the phone a little bit, but give people an idea as far as magnitude. How big is the VA? Because, you know, when they look at transformation and how many veterans we have in the country and those kinds of things, it might not seem to be as big as it is.
Yeah, the VA is huge. And that was something that I didn't realize before I joined. It's actually the second largest government agency, other than the Department of Defense. If it were a private company and you were to compare the budget of the VA against the revenue, which is how they list off the Fortune 500 companies, it would be Fortune number 6. So it would be the sixth largest company in the United States if that's what it was. There are 22 million veterans out there, approximately 9 million of which actually use the healthcare system. We have roughly 340,000 employees, and that is not counting volunteers and residents. So I've heard, that could even be 50 to 100% larger. So it's an awful lot of employees, and it's all across the country. So I think we have roughly 168 large medical centers, over 1,000 clinics, like the one that you have in Redding, California. We have, I think it's 134 cemeteries across the country. And Kristen works in one of the 56 regional offices that we have around the country.
Okay. And so VA handles, and we've kind of done some education on this before, but I'm not sure people really realize that Veterans Benefits Administration is one whole giant enterprise, I guess. And then Veterans Health is another completely different mission. Honestly, they interact. Once you get the benefits, you can use the health care, and, then you have cemetery. So are you guys taking on all three facets in this transformation, or are you starting someplace and moving on from there?
Well, we are taking on all three, because I think integration between the three is so incredibly important. For example, I didn't realize that it was actually three different sub-administrations before I joined the VA. So if 2 years ago I walked through into the Cleveland VAMC and I asked a question about my benefits, and the person behind the counter said, "Hey, that's not my job. I work at the hospital. You need to go downtown," I would have been very confused as a veteran. I wouldn't have understood. To me, it was one VA. And as a result of that, we want to, help integrate across, because I don't think veterans distinguish between VHA, VBA, and NCA, which is the National Cemetery Administration. But with that, of course, this is a huge, huge transformation, and you can't do everything at once. So we do have to prioritize within the VA, and we're doing that. We're taking the first step of what is going to be a long, long journey to transform the VA and get it to what veterans deserve.
So, okay, we know that it's gigantic. Things like that don't change overnight, no matter how much everyone wants it to, how much it needs to change, how skilled the people are at making the transformation. Realistically, what's the time frame, do you think? Maybe milestones. Like, when do you think people will really start noticing, and then when do you think you'll go back to your life? Maybe those are two different things.
Yeah, so you asked a couple of different questions in there, and I'll kind of give you at least my perspective. And,
sure.
And by the way, this is debated even within the walls of the VA. To me, a transformation of this kind is going to take years. It's really going to take a long time. When I was working with Fortune 500 companies, we always kind of used the rule of thumb of, it really takes 3 to 5 years in order to transform a low-performing company into the high-performing company that they want to. Now, when you take the government and you take healthcare, which is also very complicated, you're easily doubling and tripling that. And I had a conversation about this with one of my Harvard Business School professors just recently, who reminded me. He said, "Hey, you need to be patient. This is going to take over a decade." However, with that, we also did put in some near-term milestones as we designed the MyVA program. So what we originally did is we did a visioning exercise shortly after myself and Bob McDonald and the rest of the team came together, and we said, what is the vision that we want? And the name MyVA actually came out of that. It's a VA that veterans, employees, and the American taxpayers are proud of. And we did the visualization exercise. Okay, what would that look like? And then we did an exercise and said, okay, what would it take to get there? And we came up with five strategies that you'll see in the document. And then we reflected on exactly this question that you just asked, and we kind of overlaid the, you know, just being realistic. We have political administrations, and we knew that as a team, we have at least until the end of this year of 2016 to put in places real change. And I call it, you know, people will tell me, they'll say, hey, you know, is this a sprint or a marathon? Because as Kristen knows, you know, I tend to be pretty intense with the pace of work. And my answer is this is a relay race, and we're running the first leg of this relay race. And by the end of the first leg, which is the end of 2016, we want veterans, employees, and the taxpayers to see a real difference. So we put down some very aggressive goals. We have 12 what we're calling breakthrough priorities that you can see in the document on the site that we want to get done by the end of this year. And we're hoping that veterans start feeling the change. And, you know, I think Kristen would, you know, hopefully employees are starting to feel a change, although I know that we still have a long way to go.
Scott, what's been the reception of the employees with all this change? You know, I know most people resist change, and you get the new guy comes in and wants to shake everything up. How is that going over? Are you getting any resistance there, or are people pretty much looking forward to getting a lot of these problems solved?
You know, it's a mix. It's a great question, Bill, and that's one of our biggest challenges. One of the things that surprised me when I joined the VA is I had these perceptions of, you know, government workers or people that don't care. And what I found is quite the opposite. The vast majority of people care very deeply, and I challenge you to go to the VA and grab somebody and have a conversation with them for 5 minutes, ask them why they came to the VA in the first place, and you're going to walk away and say, wow, I didn't realize this person cared so much. And people actually work pretty hard for the most part. As well, I've been fairly impressed. However, people have been burnt before. They've seen different secretaries, different leaders like myself come in before and try to shake things up. And, you know, some have had success and some haven't. So I think when this new team came in, yeah, there's an awful lot of people that say, okay, here we go again. I've been through this before. I'm going to wait them out, whatever it might be. One of our challenges has been is actually embracing these people, you know, and get them on board. You know, Kristen, I think is a great example. You know, and Kristen, when I've spoken to her in the past, I think you had almost probably lost hope at one portion. But you know what?
I can tell you she had lost hope. We've talked about that in detail.
I know. I was a non-believer for sure. And I mean, and you know, you can't just look at this after a month and say, okay, I watched it happen. I've worked here almost a year. So the cool thing to me is starting day one thinking, okay, you know, I had all the doubts in the world. I just have to be honest. But I was going to give it my best and contribute how I could. And then I learned so much about what was happening. And I thought, what a shame, because I don't think that all the veterans know about this. So I would do my part and try and tell everybody there's good things coming. But it's going to be exciting when people are actually seeing it happen.
I think we better take a really quick break. I wanted to also throw in here, you know, when you say that the VA kind of touches everyone, I was looking at some of the statistics in your PowerPoint here, and I was really surprised. 7 out of 10 U.S. doctors receive training at VA. 7 out of 10.
Wow. Well, you'd pretty much run into everything there is to run into.
I know. So, you know, you better make sure this thing runs well.
Yeah.
Whether you're in the VA or not, apparently we're all going to be affected. Kind of interesting. Bob?
Having licensing issues.
It's all fun and games until the licensing doesn't work out for the music. Okay. So, Back to Scott and Kristen. Not back to you. You know, it's perfection we strive for here. That's our goal. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, We the People Radio. WeThePeopleRadio.us. Scott Blackburn from the VA and Kristen Rule from the VA. Kristen, we've had on many shows before, several, many. And you can find those archives at wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, Scott, so I was looking on your, I don't know if I'm fouling up your plan here, but I was looking at your PowerPoint, and one of these goals is VA letters to veterans will be simpler, clearer, easier to understand, and more effective. Okay, two words. Thank God. Jeez Louise. Yeah. If I had a penny for every veteran who's come to me at work with a letter who said, what does this even mean? And we sit there together and go, I think there's a shred of information in there, but most of it sounds like blah, 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 blah. You going to get rid of that?
Yes, we absolutely are. And, so and I think, you know, it's funny when you've gotten the letters from the VA in the past, they've read like military orders, and you're like going through and trying to decipher them and find the code and what this means, and it's extremely frustrating. You know, it's frustrating if you're trying to get an appointment, if you're trying to figure out what your disability rating is, and even imagine if you have, you know, some physical problems that, you know, but like, that's the product of what you have when you're allowing the system and the lawyers, to dictate what you write versus the veterans. And that's one of the big shifts that we're trying to do. When you know, Bob of McDonald, of course, came from the private sector, as did Sloan Gibson and so many in the leadership right now. And when Bob first walked into the doors, you know, it was like a militaristic organization. Everybody called him Mr. Secretary. Everybody stood up at attention. There was assigned seats. So they announced him when he walked into his first meeting. And he said, guys, stop. You know, this is not about us.
You're freaking me out.
This is about the veterans. Yeah, exactly.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, too, because it really sounds like they've gotten away from that simple idea that it is about the veterans, not about the administration.
Exactly. And the letter writing is exactly like that. You know, it was funny when we first started, we're redoing the website. So if you haven't gone on www.vets.gov, please do. And you'll see the future of VA websites and really what we hope is the future of government websites overall, where we actually got a handful. I think we actually now have over 30 people from Silicon Valley that we recruited. And we said, hey, you've made your money. Come to Washington and help solve some bigger problems. And they're working with veterans to design the website. And initially, one of the problems that we had was the language. And the lawyers and everybody were saying, hey, you know, you can't say this without, you know, all this other stuff. And we had this constant battle. And we said, well, we can't have all this other stuff and make it easy for veterans. We need to make it simple and easy to read for everybody. and modern, by the way, too, given the trends that are going on in technology, et cetera. And what we just found is if you have a little legal disclaimer and you can have people read the fine print and stuff like that separately, we can actually work a lot differently. So what we're going through is Bob McDonald has asked our Veterans Experience team to start with the most frequently used letters that go out to veterans and start rewriting them so that they actually make sense. And we have people that write in plain English that are doing that, working with the administration.
Yeah, and how about the one that says your claim is still being worked on that doesn't sound like sit down and shut up, we'll get to you when we feel like it?
Exactly.
I got to tell you, people get that, they're like, I got another blow-off letter today. It's like, I'm sorry. You know, and then sometimes they get the letter. I mean, I'm glad you have computer guys in there because you guys have a, it's just a tangled web, you know, mm-hmm. of all these different computer systems. And so people will get the letter, the blow-off letter that says, yeah, you know, blah, 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 your claim, blah, 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 2018, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, 2 days later, money will show up in their bank account. They'll call, I got money. What does that mean? I'm like, oh, that means the letter that says your claim was approved is in the mail. Yeah, but what happened to 2018? Yeah, I don't know. And then the website, what is it? What's the one they go to? E-Benefits. And E-Benefits yeah. says it's going to be done in 20. I mean, it's like they have five answers for every thing and nobody can figure out what's true.
Yeah, and it becomes a product of this, the VA was built up over many decades almost as an assembly line. So Congress would pass a bill and say, we're going to do the GI Bill or health care or insurance or home loans or whatever it might be, and the VA would then build up an assembly line to produce that. The problem is that those assembly lines never actually came to each other and nobody cared, and now we do care. And we're flipping that and saying, okay, if it's not about us, we're moving away from that assembly line mentality towards what does the veteran care about. And you mentioned some of the technology challenges. I'll just give you a couple of personal examples. When I was separated from service, I lived in Alaska and I applied for my disability and compensation. When I needed to go back to school, I applied for vocational rehab. I lived in Massachusetts. When I bought my first house, I lived in Ohio. And when I finally got my health care done, I live in Maryland. The VA system thinks I'm four different people because I'm in four different computer systems that don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
So we're fixing that. That's going to be a big technological lift. We have over 1,000 websites that are veteran-facing that we're going to condense down to one, including e-benefits. We have, I think it's 975 different phone numbers, 976 if you count the secretary's cell phone number, which he gives out sometimes, that veterans could call. We're going to condense that down into one easy-to-remember phone number. And we're working these things as quickly as we possibly can, but with some of the technological challenges, it does take a little bit of time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, honestly, anybody who thinks that this is going to get fixed overnight is kidding themselves. But the idea that you actually recognize the problem, because it seems like oftentimes with these kind of big bureaucracies, that's just the way we do it. You know, it's kind of like get used to it and get over it because we're not really going to change anything.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times it comes off that way. But, you know, I think when you step back and look at the size of the organization and, you know, I want to believe that the majority of the people that work there want to do a good job and want to do the right thing for the veterans, but they have to work with the system that's in place. And if the system is complicated and screwed up, and they can't work outside that system, it comes right back to them, and that gets turned right back onto the veterans, and that's where the breakdown starts. And so it's always the person on the other side of the desk that's going to catch it. And, you know, being in customer service my whole life, I know how that is. You might be the one that makes the promise and basically makes the sale, but the follow-up is what's going to make that person believe you or not the next time they come in, and you have no control over that. So I feel for you. I mean, the system that you're working with is gigantic. And to turn that around is like turning around a freighter out in the middle of the ocean. It takes a little room.
And Bill, you really hit the nail on the head with that comment. It is the people. When I go into the VA, when I filed for my claim or home loan or medical care, it's not somebody in Washington. Those people are far from the veterans. It's a nurse. It's a receptionist. It's the person in the call center who's answering the phone. And getting to those people and inspiring them to go and do the right thing makes all the difference in the world. And that's why we're trying to push down the idea of moving from a rule or fear-based organization to a principles-based organization, where when a veteran comes in, when they're coming to the VA, they're not coming on their happiest day of their life.
No.
One of the people in the cemetery administration, which is fantastic, by the way, if anybody's ever experienced their service, they're actually the number one service customer service rated organization in the country by one independent organization. I asked them. I said, "How do you do it?" And they said, "When you see the veteran's family come in that day, you realize this is one of the worst days of their life, and you only have one shot to make it." Well, it's the same thing when people are coming in for health care. They're not coming in on their best day. It's the same thing when they're calling the regional office. They're calling over and over again because they need something. And we need to really stress this principle-based decision-making, doing the right thing, living the values every single day amongst all our employees. As Bill, as you mentioned, if you take a look at the best customer service organizations in the world, they are also... It maps one-to-one with the best places to work. And if we need to win over our employees, we need to make the VA a great place to work so that they're willing to go above and beyond to serve veterans.
Yeah.
Sure.
And that person that is making the initial contact with that veteran, that is so important that they have that good attitude, and then also they've got support behind them to back up.
Yeah, that they don't get punished for doing the right thing.
Well, that and
we've heard a lot about that.
You know, when they tell a veteran this is what's going to happen, the veteran should have no reason to believe that's not going to happen.
That's true.
So they have to have that support behind them, and I think that's where a lot of the failures come is the support end of it.
Sure. And people like Kristen who's pipe up and say, "Hey, I think this is, messed up or could be improved or whatever," and then it turns into World War III rather than let's see how we can make that happen. It's your whole idea is, I think, what people have been wishing would happen for a long time. And I'm sure a lot of people, well, like Kristen, that work at VA are like, "Oh, finally, my input is going to be valuable. Being good at my job is actually going to be a good thing rather than a liability." I think those are all upside. Let's take one really quick break and we'll come back. Hey, Scott, can you tell people about the VA feedback tool when we come back?
Sure, absolutely. And by the way,
I think that sounds super fun.
I think Bob needs a pay raise. You get the Scorpions and the Warriors. Fantastic.
Well,
that's why I come back. Their music skills.
We'll have to play Kristen's special song for you here. probably on our way back in. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Through the war, future dreams we have to realize. About Kristen.
All the whistleblower girls. They had to have their own special song. Actually, I think, Kristen, I think you brought that on yourself. I believe at one point you told us something about you were a bad girl at the VA and that, well, obviously.
No, I said I was never a bad girl. I said I survived till age 30. You know, I came from a father who was a polygrapher. And
I didn't know that.
I pretty much, you know, I'd never been arrested. I don't even think I ever got detention.
That's always a plus, yeah.
So I went to the VA, and that's when I was saying, you know, instantly I became told I was bad all the time, so I didn't know what was going on.
And somehow that morphed into Kristen's a bad girl at the VA, and this is her special song. How quickly we forget. Scott, we'll work on a special song for you.
All right.
He's like, oh, I'm super excited. Not.
Yeah, thank you.
And don't give us any details of your life, otherwise they become a special song. Hey, but I guess you're one of five kids. I'm one of five kids. See? Takes people who come from large crowds. Bill's one of four kids. So we tend to...
We got a lot in common.
Yeah, we tend to fix things because we're used to working in a crowd. okay, so tell us about this this VA feedback tool, because I got to tell you, I have a lot of people who would like to give feedback. So when does that start working, or do you know?
Well, we've actually set up an entire office. We call it the Veterans Experience Office that is kind of leading the charge and collecting feedback and really understanding what level of service that veterans want. And they're doing a couple of things. One is we're applying a technique that called human-centered design. This is the same technique that Apple uses to make their products user-friendly. And we've hired a bunch of designers that are coming in, and they've done a lot of really interesting stuff. They figured out that veterans are not all alike. So, for example, I'm an Operation Enduring Freedom veteran. My father's generation, they're all Vietnam veterans. My mom's brother, had PTSD and fell on some hard times and was even, potentially homeless at one point in time. My grandfather's a World War II veteran. We're all very different, and we interact with the VA in very different ways. So we came up in the private sector, you would call it customer segmentation. We call it veteran personas that use the VA in different ways. And we found these personas by going out there and actually talking and interacting with veterans on what do they want. We're also using analytics. We're establishing our own little Moneyball team, if you will, of really smart people that will go and dig into statistics and figure out what people actually care about, and then that will then inform how we actually design our different services. So we're building up that capability in the organization as well. We're measuring overall experience. As a matter of fact, it's still in very early days, but I think one of the slides in my presentation, you can see that, you know, just between, I think it's January and May, we're seeing an uptick. It's way too early, and we have way too long to go to declare a victory or anything, but we're encouraged that something might be working. And we're seeing an improved experience out there. But we also have to improve on the operational metrics, whether it be wait times or backlogs or things like that. And we are setting up tools in which that we're having teams in each one of the districts so that veterans can come in and they could interact with these folks and send in feedback so that they can be heard. We can identify problems and solve problems in more real time.
See, that is so great, because right now, I think at the clinic level anyway, I don't know about the bigger hospitals and stuff, but what we deal with here is all those things fall on the patient advocate. And oftentimes the patient advocate, okay, I'm going to say most of the time, just from what I hear, but I only hear the problems, so my viewpoint's skewed, but they're not able to fix those problems. And I don't know how far up the food chain that reporting goes. So if veterans could actually use this interface, so many people have phones where they can use apps, it seems like that would just take a load off of the facility and actually get you guys the information you need to make change.
You're exactly right, and we're piloting that right now. Matter of fact, our first pilot is in Baltimore, where we're going to have we're calling it VOICE, and don't ask me what VOICE stands for, but it's an acronym for something, which there's kiosks and smartphones, and veterans are able to type in, hey, here's how my experience was today, here's things that we need to improve on. So it goes in instantaneously. What we're finding as well is actually we could use the same platform for employees to provide real time, which is exactly what we went out there. We studied Starbucks and Ritz-Carlton and USAA and all kinds of other best practice companies and what they did. And every single day, the barista at Starbucks will type in, did we live our values today? Yes or no. And we want to get that type of real-time feedback and see how that correlates with our employees, too.
Fabulous. All right, we're talking to Scott Blackburn from the VA and Kristen Rule also from the VA. We're going to do this for the next hour, too. We've still got a whole ton of information to deliver. You have 5 minutes, however, to get some coffee. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of We the People. You can find the first hour at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll have the archive up right after the show. It'll have all the commercials in it. And then this afternoon, 3:30, 4 o'clock, something like that, we will have commercial-free archives split by the hours, so you can listen to one, listen to the other. You can put it on Facebook, send it to your friends, pop it out on Twitter. That is a good tool, by the way. If you're not using Twitter, you should be. There's a ton of good stuff on there. There's a ton of funny stuff, too. So if you'd like to just burn some time, it's a good place to burn time, but it's also a good place to get information. We are here with Scott Blackburn from the VA. He is a U.S. Army veteran and also a veteran in private industry who has taken up the, the case of the VA, I guess. Well, they're heading up a task force. It's called My VA. I don't know what they call the task force, but we're going to see it as My VA. And Kristen Rule, our whistleblower from Philadelphia that we've had on several times before, is part of this task force. So she had alerted me last week that this was just going really well, and it wasn't just smoke and mirrors or, you know, a bunch of happy talk that was going to add up to nothing, and thought we should have Scott on here to tell us all about it. So that's my short synopsis of the first hour. Scott, can you tell us about, since we're in far northern California, and I'm looking at your map, for those folks who are not looking online, there is a PowerPoint on there, and there's also another really good PDF with a ton of information if you'd like to send it to someone. But I'm on slide number 21, and it says Diffusion of Excellence, Spreading Best Practices. And I notice we don't have anything going on, well, in some states, but in far northern California. Do you guys need an experimental place for rural America?
I think we would love that.
Because we would really like to volunteer. We want to raise our hand and volunteer, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, we will have to make that happen. I don't know, there's a clinic out in Reading. But yeah, the diffusion of excellence, so it's very interesting, and I did not know this about the VA, but we have 168 major medical centers and all kinds of clinics that were set up to run relatively independent from each other. And as a result, what we would find is everybody innovated on their own, and would find a solution, and they would be very proud that they're the only VA that, that does X. And then they wouldn't tell the other 167 places about that
unless
it was by accident. It's absolutely crazy. So when we went around and we started asking people for best practices, and Kristen was part of the Idea House team that was going, and we realized, we said, wait a second here. We got a lot of good stuff going on that just isn't being spread. So we actually organized a team, we modeled it after the TV show Shark Tank, in which people submitted best practices, and we whittled it down to something like 140. And then we had people bid on those 140 best practices. And instead of in Shark Tank, instead of the bidding with venture capital money, they actually bid with people and resources and said, hey, budget, you know, I'm willing to go and implement these best practices. So we got the 140 all the way down to 13 killer best practices that we want to spread all the way across the country. And what we're doing right now is we identified, for example, one of the best practices came out of Fresno, California, and they're just doing an awesome job in Fresno in a very, very creative way, getting same-day appointments, which is one of our, or same-day access, which is one of our big priorities in Fresno. And the people in the Gulf Coast, Mississippi, you know, Alabama, et cetera, said, hey, we want some of that. Bring that here. And Fresno is actually mentoring the Gulf Coast on how to do that. And now they're going out and mentoring others on how to do that. And we're really hoping that this catch on. We're starting with these 13 best practices, but we're hoping this becomes systematic and part of the culture.
I think that's great, because see, up where we are, well, there was a, I don't know if you saw it in the chat, see if I can read this here. Here's one of our guys says, was sent to Travis Air Force Base 2 weeks ago for a neurosurgeon consult, 6-hour round trip. The doctor told me he looked at my MRI and MRA, whatever that is, and told me he couldn't do anything for me until I talked to a neurologist. Well, that was time well spent. You know, and that's why I said, if you're looking for a place to experiment, at least from the veteran side, I don't know how the clinics and those guys feel about it, but we are the closest clinic to Sacramento, which is really the hub of medical services there with Mather and Travis, and you have, you know, the big facilities there. So you head 2.5 hours north and you get to us. And then you have a smaller clinic, another hour, 20 minutes north of us, and there's one in between. So we're only, the entire northern end of California is only served by these two small clinics and then a single physician up in far northern California. So most of those folks wind up going to the Oregon facilities because it's just too far. Or they sit on a van. They've got to catch the van at, I don't know, they got to get up at like 2 o'clock in the morning or something in order to get the van to go to down to Sacramento, sometimes for something pretty basic,
yeah.
Periodontal work or something like that.
Well, we have a huge, huge veteran community here, and they're very active. I mean, there's always something going on involving the veterans in Redding or in Shasta County.
Yeah, they're really active, and they would love to help.
Yeah, and we want to canvas that energy, and it, you know, it's really too bad. It's way too often that I hear stories like that, and you know, we really need to press on them, particularly in rural America. We are working on things like telehealth to expand that, so it's easier. So, for example, you know, my dad lives, you know, he's now 70 years old. Living in Massachusetts, it's a really a burden for him to get into to Boston, particularly for routine type of you know, appointments. So, is there other ways that we could use technology so people don't have to drive 3 hours for routine type of things? One of the other things that we're doing is we're trying to cut out the steps in the process that don't make sense. So for example, in the past, you've had to go to your primary care doctor.
Yes.
If you want some kind of referral for audiology or optometry. which just doesn't make any sense. So we're cutting that out so that we have more direct appointments, which is also going to unclog our primary care.
Well, that's always been a question mark for me, because if they have to wait to get into primary care, and we've had some pretty good shortages up here, so they've got to wait just to get into something basic, and the primary care person isn't going to do anything for them anyway. So, oh my gosh, that would be very well received. I know that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, another thing, too, is you have to remember that, you know, one bad story is going to get repeated, 11 to 1 versus a good story. And that's why I'm kind of excited that Scott's on today, is we get to hear the good stuff today.
Yes, and it isn't fake good stuff.
Typically, we only hear the bad stuff. So, I mean, this is pretty exciting news.
I think one of the coolest things about it, too, is to the people on this team that I'm seeing, one bad story is one too many. So I've even seen when someone's just written in to explain that they had a bad experience, they'll actually, you know, follow up and show you that they do care about you. Like, it's, to me, I'm just seeing a whole different mentality. I'm seeing a different way of doing business, and I don't know. I'm just happy to be part of the team.
And that's a great point, Kristen, because I think if they just know you care is 90% of the problem. But when they walk in and get the impression that nobody really cares about their problem, it's going to be an uphill struggle from that point on. So, no, that's a great point.
I think that a lot of these things, you know, just with a mindset change, I think we all know that culture is everything. And so when you get a culture in a corporation or a large agency or whatever, you drive away a lot of good people, you reward a lot of bad behavior, and you cement in a lot of bad practices instead of best practices. So I think that the tack you guys are taking is really helpful. Kristen had told me, too, that, Scott, just in case you didn't know, she has people that call in just to test the system. They call in and make recommendations or complaints or whatever.
Nice.
Just to see if anybody calls back. You'll never know who it is.
Secret shopper.
Yeah, secret shoppers. I think that's a great idea.
Because
a lot of people call me sometimes when something goes wrong, and I love to help people, but sometimes I say, okay, I think we have a new VA. I think if you take this route and you try and stand up for yourself, or you report this issue that you're having, let's just see if they're going to fix it first. If you have no success or it's not going so well, call me back, and we'll think of another plan. And I usually don't get any callbacks. So
that's good.
I can see that things are changing.
See, that's fun when you can see it directly, especially when you were experiencing the opposite before. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come back. Scott, you will have to direct us for the last part of this. Otherwise, we will miss a lot of good stuff. So we'll shut up and let you drive the bus. When we return, you are listening to We the People. We're chatting with the folks from the VA, Scott Blackburn and Kristen Rule. You can find all the information online, wethepeopleradio.us.
So many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Brave, gotta call it brave to chase that dream across the sea. Names, then they sign their names for something they believe. How the blood ran red, we laid our dead in sacred ground. Just think, wonder what they'd think if they could see us now. It's been a long, hard ride, got a ways to go, but this is still the place that we all call home.
Been
I think that ought to be your hold music right there. Not bad. All right, Scott. What else are you guys up to that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, we got all kinds of stuff going up. I was just exchanging notes with Kristen, and she mentioned we should probably talk a little bit about what we're doing on appeals of reform, as I know that's something
that would be good.
Kind of stresses everybody else. Oh yeah, this is something I didn't realize before I came to the VA, but how long it takes for people to get the appeals through. And in a lot of cases, it's years. And I think, Aaron, you even kind of mentioned a couple of examples where you know, in some places it even has gotten to decades.
Absolutely
absurd.
Yeah, like three. And then they denied him anyway yesterday, as a matter of fact. So it gets to go to court now. Fabulous.
And it's a really bizarre system, and there's a lot of things wrong with it. And veterans can continue to appeal, which will clog up the system for other veterans and various different things. So there are folks on the team that said, okay, we need to take a completely different view of this, because if you look at the way that the claims backlog it spiked up, and then the team did a good job driving that backlog down. Well, all those get pushed to the right. And as we took a look at our current appeals, I think right now our backlog is over 400,000, and it would grow to over 2 million within a few years. And so the situation would only get worse. So we took a look at that, and we said, gosh, this needs fresh eyes. We need to do something very, very different. And this was a great example of saying, what's the right thing to do for the veterans? So we actually convened different veteran service organizations, leaders in, with a lot of different opinions. We got congressional folks in from both sides of the aisle involved in this. We reached out to to the states. Each state has has their own little state secretary of Veterans Affairs. So we reached out to that organization, got different folks involved, and we literally locked ourselves into a room for a couple of days and said, "This, the current situation is not acceptable. What can we do to fix this?" One of the leaders from one of the veterans service organizations told us at the beginning, he said, "There's no way in hell you're ever going to get everybody on the same page there." But you know what? After a couple of days locked in the room and focused on what's the right thing for the veterans, we did. And we put together a bill that is going through the Senate and the House right now that will address a lot of these issues and hopefully make appeals a lot more smoother and a lot easier in the future. Still has to pass, it still has to go through, but I think that's something that is very different. And one of the things we're proud of is how we work together as a team with the Veteran Service Organizations, Congress, and others to get that done.
Well, I think that's really helpful, because I mean, Congress has been all over you guys, and I know that the Congressional Office here in Northern California has, just because we just have so many, and it's not just trivial complaints. I mean, these are big things that affect people's lives, and the answer that we get is either crickets or, you know, BS. So it would be good to have a lot more accountability and some people who are looking to problem solve that stuff. I think that's going to be an excellent trend.
You know, something that I'll never forget that I heard in one of the meetings. We have every other Tuesday we have a meeting, and everybody that's on the MyVA team, you know, if you're virtual, you call in, or some people that are there, they gather in, you know, in a conference room. And so one meeting I heard somebody say, "We need to get the right people in the right places doing the right things." And I was like, wow, that's a start. That's like your best. That's like great, because I realize there's a lot of great people at the VA, and some people have amazing skills, but they might not be in the right job for them. So when I heard them say that, I felt like, wow, they understand the problem.
Exactly. And, you know, that brings up a question, Scott. What's going on with human resources as far as that goes? Because we've heard about a lot of people doing bad things, and it's, you know, obviously those things have been, a lot of them have been proven, but it seems like nothing ever happens, and those people are still in charge of large swaths of veterans and employees. You guys have an element that's going there too?
Yeah, we do, and human resources has been a big challenge for a lot of different reasons, and that's an area that we absolutely need to get right. As Chris, I love the way that you put it. You know, Bob McDonald and Sloan Gibson will talk about the author Jim Collins, who wrote a bunch of different books, but he talks about getting the right people in the right seats on the bus. And what we're finding is there is a lot of that. We need to get people in positions that absolutely match their skills. You know, for those people that don't belong there, you know, we need to get them doing something else, right? Get them out of the system. Another thing that we need to address is hiring, right? Is speed of hiring. So one of the initiatives that we found out is when we went to figure out why is customer service so bad in certain places, you know, we were asking, hey, do we need greeters? Do they need training or whatever it might be? One of the things we found, which was surprising, was they just didn't have people there, period. And what was happening is these are entry-level positions, and they would turn over at a rate of something like 30% of a year, some of which, by the way, some of that turnover is great because these are entry-level positions and the good people are moving up, and we want to continue to encourage that. But when the people would leave, we would act surprised. And it would then take 4 to 6 months for these people to be replaced. And then we didn't screen for customer service. And then when we did bring these people on, we wouldn't give them the training that they needed to succeed. So we're addressing that. We're now taking a completely different look at that. We're going to predict that type of turnover. If we know that 100 people are going to leave in any given year, we're going to figure out, okay, how many people do we need to hire every single month to keep up with that? We're leaning out the process to hire. So the steps that don't make sense or can be done in parallel, we're going to address those. We're going to screen for customer service and for the right skills, and then we're going to give the people the right training. This is an initiative that we're calling Hire Right, Hire Fast, that will address a lot of these issues and hopefully get better people at the front lines being able to serve it. And then we're also focusing on leader development as well. We have a program called Leaders Developing Leaders. One of the problems that we have in the past that has really kind of you know killed us is we promoted on at best technical competency, not on leadership skills, and we haven't trained people on how to be a great leader, which is so bizarre to so many people in the military. But in the VA, you know, that wasn't happening. So we're now focused on just basic blocking and tackling leadership type of skills. How do you be more vulnerable and share your story? How do you eliminate bureaucracy that doesn't make sense? How do you communicate a vision and a story? How do you put together a plan to get to that vision? And these are things that we're cascading throughout the organization to really kind of strengthen the workforce. But it will take a little bit of time to get to the broad, you know, 340,000 people that we talked about earlier.
Sure. And what about doctors? You know, I hear that a lot, especially up here in the rural areas, that it is really cumbersome to hire doctors into the VA. And then, I don't know what's going on, but here we have a lot of them coming in and going out sometimes at the same time. You know, they come in, they don't stay long, and they leave.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems is this isn't just a VA problem. It's an American healthcare problem. We don't have enough doctors, nurses, and healthcare professionals.
Sure.
as a country overall. And then, you know, we do get a lot of great doctors that care about veterans and that will stay for a period of time. But we need to also be able to pay them effectively. We have a couple of bills to have a little bit more flexibility and be able to do that. We do need to recruit more. One of the things that is concerning is with all the negative press that we've gotten over the last couple of years, our number of applications for doctors has tanked significantly because people are worried about, hey, they have these perceptions about going to work at the VA, and we need to address that. We need to change those perceptions, and we need to get doctors through here. We want every doctor, as you mentioned before, 7 out of 10 doctors in the United States have at least done, you know, a part of their residency at the VA. When I talk to doctor friends and private doctors out there, they look very fondly at their time at the VA because they get to serve the best patients in the world. But, you know, we need to make it a more attractive day-to-day, venture for those people, particularly in the rural areas.
Sure. And I guess the hiring process is hard. And I don't know what it entails. I didn't go to med school, but I guess it's really cumbersome and it takes forever.
It takes way too long. It takes absolutely way too long. And we're taking steps to kind of streamline and address that. The other part that is taking way too long is critical hires in our the people that actually run our medical center. What we're finding is those medical centers that actually perform well. And when you actually took a look at the data, about 25% of the VA hospitals actually perform at great levels, among the best hospitals in the country. You can take our Palo Alto facility, the Boston facility, Indianapolis facility. These are fantastic facilities. We have 50% that are average, and we have about 25% that need some significant help. And when you take a look at what one of the key differentiators there, it's leadership continuity and a good leader that is running the hospital. And I forget the numbers right now, but our vacancy rates of medical service directors is way too high. And we've identified those as critical positions so that we can get stability in some of these underperforming medical centers.
I think that's awesome. Because we do see gaps in those things. I'm also curious, excuse me, I'm also curious on just the setup with the benefits administration and the health administration. Like in benefits, the claims process is run like an assembly line. I'm always explaining this to people. They're like, why isn't there someone I can call? And it's like, well, it isn't like real claims. Like if you get an auto claim, you call your adjuster, and they sort of carry you through the whole process. You might go get quotes from a shop, but if there's a problem, the adjuster deals with it. In the claims process, it's more like a car assembly line. I mean, the guy that puts on the side view mirrors doesn't know anything about bumpers because that was done by somebody else. Is there any thought to making it a more... I don't know if friendly is the right word, but more like real claims, you know, how regular claims go, where you have somebody who actually knows the claim and follows it along.
Yeah, there is, and I'd love to get Kristen's point of view because she's actually worked in a regional office. I haven't, but I think the focus historically has just been on just cranking out production and not realizing that there's a veteran face beyond this. And actually in Philadelphia, Kristen, I know recently they did something called Vet Connect, and this, by the way, was an idea of two employees, one in central office, one in the Philadelphia office, where they brought in a bunch of veterans that actually use the services in the benefit office. And they had 100 employees from the Philadelphia regional office that came in, and they connected with them, and they had conversations around what's working and what's not, and what are their frustrations with the system, and they realized that, hey, these are real people, and I think when you're able to do that, you get that better customer service. We are going to move to, by Veterans Day of this year, there is going to be one common phone number that you can call if you don't know how to reach or the VA or who to call at the VA. You call this one common number, and we'll get you to the right person. So we're moving in that direction.
Wow, that's...
Kristen, you probably have thoughts, actually, having worked in an RO before.
Yeah, and what I do notice is in the last few years I've seen a push towards automation, and there was, that had its own struggles in the beginning. But what I see happening just from, as an everyday rank-and-file employee, is I see them pushing certain things towards automation, which once they get all the wrinkles out, I think that'll be better because then they'll be able to focus. There'll be certain things that they can focus on that they have to manually, where some claims can be automated and we can use our talent for things that require more experience. They're coming up with a national work queue, which is interesting as well. And, you know, without getting into too much detail, there's just new things, and just like anything, at the beginning sometimes there's wrinkles, but I'm seeing everything, everybody's working together as a team, because for once I feel like they recognize the problems. And if they were fixed too fast, they probably wouldn't be fixed the right way.
Sure.
So I think in a little bit of time.
And
even with vets.gov, that's something I didn't know about until I joined the MyVA team, where you can log in, and there were things where you could check things for your education. Like if you wanted to go to school, there were different schools that were participating. You could research to see if the school you wanted to go to was, you know, qualified for what you were applying for, and eventually there's going to be other things on that website. So I think in due time.
You can do things a little bit more for yourself then.
Yeah.
As a veteran. That'd be, I think people would like to be able to take a little more, have a little more hands-on. Got to take
or
a really
quick... Or at least review things to make sure, you know, I'm not sure what happened when I sent my claim, and, oh, look, I can look.
Oh,
and
that's
I can
true.
See where it is. And if it's not where you think it is, then you can call the VA instead of having to call the VA because you're not sure even if it got there.
So you're going to close the black hole? We're going to take away the black hole option. we need to take a really quick break. When we come back, Bill's got a question for you. I don't know what it is. Should we leave him in suspense, or do you want to ask him now?
Well, it kind of gets back to the online technology side of it. And how many folks are really going to have the ability, patience, and expertise to navigate an online system?
It's going to be easy. That's the whole point. So you guys can address that when we come back. Got to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People. We are chatting with Scott Blackburn and Kristen Rule from the VA. We'll be right back. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and at 'em bright and early, I'm all business in my suit. Yeah, I'm dressed up for success, from my head down to my boots. I don't do it for the money, there's bills that I can't pay. I don't do it for the glory, I just do it anyway. Providing for our futures, my responsibility. Yeah, I'm real good under pressure, being all that I can be. And I can't call in sick on Monday when the weekend's been too strong. I just work straight through the holidays, sometimes all night long. You can bet that I stand ready when the wolf growls at the door. Hey, I'm solid, hey, I'm steady, hey, I'm true down to the core. And I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost, I know the sacrifice. Oh, and I don't want to die for you, but if dying's asking me, I'll bear that cross with honor, cause freedom don't come free. Beside my brothers and my sisters, I will proudly take a stand. When liberty's in jeopardy, I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines, sleep in peace tonight. American soldier,
what you got to hide?
Okay, Scott. So we've got a burning question. Talk to us about the technology side of it. A lot of this is web-based. What about the folks that aren't so good with technology?
Yeah, it gets back a little bit to what I was talking about before with the customer segmentation or the veteran personas, as we're calling it. Different veterans are going to interact with the system in very different ways. My grandfather, he's passed, but the World War II veteran would not jump on the computer and vets.gov and things of that nature. So we're finding alternative ways and we're to do that. So for those that are leveraging technology, whether it's My Healthy Vet or eBenefits or vets.gov to get the services they need, or, you know, in-person and local clinics or vet centers or whatever that mean, we're working with those folks to kind of figure out how is the best, what do they really care about, and how can we deliver that in a effective and efficient means that is being responsible with taxpayer money.
I think that's cool. And talk to me about, I can't tell you how many times I've phoned a different VA facility, and always embedded in that voicemail is, and by the way, if you're considering suicide, call this other number, and they rattle it off, and I'm thinking, how many people that are going to, I mean, okay, I'm fortunate, I've never tried to kill myself, but if I was going to, I'm not doing it with a pencil in my hand, you know? Like, who's writing down this number and then calling it?
That has been that's actually one of our breakthrough priorities, and that should be fixed in the next couple of months. The goal is by the end of the summer. I can't remember the exact date, but when you call a VA medical center, all you have to do is, if you're in crisis, press 7.
Oh, thank goodness!
And we've started doing that. I can't remember how many facilities we have that in place right now. We pilot it, and we're rolling that out now. We're going area of the country by area of the country in the process of rolling that out. But that's been an incredible frustrating piece. But let me tell you, and reminder to any callers in there that are ever in crisis, our Veterans Crisis Line, located up in Canandaigua, New York, does amazing work, does absolutely amazing work. And I can't tell you the number of veterans when I've been out there talking that have come to me and grabbed me and say, hey, I had a bad night one night and I called that line and that line saved my life. And last week in Boston, I heard a story that absolutely had me in tears from a veteran's wife whose husband was thinking about doing harm to himself and called that line. So if you are in trouble, please do call that line and get the help that you need. They do fantastic work.
I'm glad to hear that that's going to be easier, because I've always wondered, why can't it just be push a button? You know what I mean? Like, why can't that be one of the choices of really early on? Because it's an emergency.
I like what you said, too, about same-day appointments, or at least the ability to get an appointment in a timely fashion, because I hear that a lot, where folks call in and, you know, they basically get kind of a runaround, or at least that's how they feel, and it's sometimes weeks before they can get in to see somebody, and gosh, that just, you talk about put a tear in your eye, it's just not right.
Yeah, and we've, it's interesting, because a lot's been made of the wait times. We have a slightly different philosophy that if you need to see a doctor now, you need to see a doctor now. And we need to figure out a way to do that. So, for example, as Kristen knows, I had a little bicycle accident on Father's Day weekend when I was out. I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old boys, and they had bought me a new bicycle for my birthday a few weeks earlier. We went on our first bike ride. I ended up, or at the very end, I slipped over the handlebars and I shattered my arm. So I had to have surgery.
That's why grown-ups don't have bikes.
I know.
or skateboards.
I had to have surgery.
Ooh.
And I called up and I needed a pre-op appointment from the VA. And I needed it by Friday. And I was calling them on a Tuesday or Wednesday. But I basically said, look, I need an appointment right now. And they initially, they try to figure out there's nothing in the schedule and everything. But I was able to, using the secure messaging, email the doctor directly. This is what the scheduler told me to do. Email the doctor directly at the Washington VAMC. And he wrote me back an hour later and said, hey, come in tomorrow morning at 8:30. I'll fit you in. I had my pre-op appointment, was able to have surgery. So when people need urgent appointments, we need to get them in. It wouldn't have been acceptable for me to wait 29 days in that case. And we need to build a more flexible system to meet the needs of our patients.
And I think that's what really excites me, Scott, about you is the fact that you've experienced, number one, you're a vet, and you've experienced the machinery of the VA, and you know what needs to be done.
Well, and you also stink at doublespeak, just in case no one has mentioned that before.
Yeah, you have pretty good at answering questions.
You have no future as a bureaucrat. Because I have to say, typically we ask questions of people at the VA, and it turns into like a filibuster. You know, everything becomes a filibuster, and it just, you know, nothing grinds me more than, you know, you ask a direct question, and sometimes the answer's long, I get it, but most of the time it's just circular. Mm-hmm. So the non-circular nature of your approach, your personal approach, I think is probably really, really refreshing.
Scott starts all of his meetings
off.
It's
something I'm very passionate about.
He has an eye care jar, and at the beginning of our meeting, not every meeting, but every other week we have this meeting. We read some other things that employees could have submitted about, you know, people they work with. So we always start our meeting with reading nice things about somebody else that you work with and showing, you know, that that's important too. And sometimes when I hear that, you know, if someone reads one about me, like my day goes 10 times better just from someone, just hearing someone say thanks or, you know, you did a good job.
That's kind of a nice change.
Yeah, that's being in the customer service field, I can tell you, the phone call just to say thank you or you're doing a great job, hang in there, that doesn't happen very often.
Well, and as you can see, he's definitely busy. So it's cool to me that he takes time out to remember that kind of stuff, too.
Absolutely.
I think it's a very important part of the culture that we're trying to build. You know, the VA gets a lot of bad press and it really trickles down to the workforce, and there's a self-esteem problem. I kind of relate back, when I was in college, I played quarterback and I loved playing football 6.5 days a week, and the half day a week I didn't like was film sessions. So I would throw 4 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. When you're watching the films and you see the touchdowns, they breeze right through it, and they say, yep, that's your job. And I'm like, hey, wait a sec, I did a great job. But when you get the interceptions, you play it over and over again, and what were you thinking? You know, somebody, one of the members of our advisory committee mentioned it's kind of like training a puppy. You need to smack them on the nose when they need to be smacked on the nose, but you also need to give them treats to reinforce good behavior as well.
True, because we've spoken to a lot of your unhappy employees, and I know that many of them over time have not felt valued. And they've been people who desperately wanted to do a great job, but they eventually had to leave because they couldn't take it anymore. Trying to do a good job just got them in trouble. So I think that this trend is fabulous. We have to take one more quick break before the top of the hour. It'll be a fast one. And then when we come back, you guys let us know anything you want people to go and look at or anything we've missed. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. just remarking during the break, Scott, since you haven't heard any of our previous programs, we used to love using that song, Dirty Laundry. So we've made it through a whole show about the VA, and we haven't had to use the song Dirty Laundry, so it's kind of confusing.
I am going to have to get the soundtrack of songs from Bob, though. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think that last one should probably be your theme song. Yeah, if you got a problem, we can help. So what else do people need to know? Especially folks that are listening who maybe aren't veterans but know people who use the VA who maybe have experienced issues or whatever, what's the first thing they should tell them to do based on this information?
Well, I think the first thing is if a veteran needs help, then to encourage the veteran to get help. The one thing that breaks my heart often is, I ran into a childhood friend of mine who was an Army Ranger, that was wounded in combat, and this was, fantastic athlete growing up, and he's got a bad shoulder, bad legs, and I asked him, I said, hey, are you going to the VA? And he said, oh, no, I've never even tried. I've had enough of the government. But there's help that you can get from the VA, whether it's through the crisis line, healthcare, applying for the benefits that veterans have earned, whatever it might be. If people need help, to go ahead and to ask help. And for even those folks that aren't veterans, to go out there to volunteer, to band together. There's so many great veteran service organizations to join or volunteer opportunities. One thing that's really cool that we've launched are what we're calling community veteran advisory boards. And I think there's one that's actually in the works in Sacramento. Sounds like there even could be one that is needed there in Redding that we could talk offline about. There's one in Philadelphia that's already up and going. What we did is we joined forces with an existing organization called the Delaware Valley Veterans Consortium in Philadelphia that we're standing up, and we're using these forums in which they're actually run by veterans in the community, in which other veterans can express concerns and we can solve problems down at the local level. And the VA will have a seat at the table. Congressional folks will have a seat at the table. VSOs, veteran service organizations, will have a seat at the table, and will resolve issues closer to the front lines versus having to escalate them through your congressman or up to the secretary or somebody like myself in Washington. We're setting these in place, and as they're getting up and going, to join these organizations and to help really, really make a difference. Also, for anybody that's listening on there, I would encourage you to go on vets.gov, which is the new veteran interface. We haven't marketed it very heavily because it's kind of being designed in the open. On the bottom right hand corner, there's a place where you can provide feedback. So if you want to go and test that out, we're very proud. We just unveiled a new and faster way where you can instantaneously apply for healthcare and get a decision right there, which is a novel idea, rather than waiting several weeks or months to get your decision that should be relatively obvious. So we're making these improvements in real time, and all the feedback we can get, we would greatly appreciate.
That's awesome, because there are really easy things, like adding a dependent that just take years. It's nuts. So
yeah, that should be instantaneous.
Yeah, that's kind of what we thought. Oh, my gosh. You're a breath of fresh air, Scott. Kristen, this is the best lead you've ever had. Even though we didn't get to play Dirty Laundry.
Maybe we don't need to play Dirty Laundry.
I know. Isn't that awesome? We can go beat up the IRS next.
But we still got to play Bad Girls.
Yeah, we did get to play Bad Girls. That is always a plus. Thanks a lot, both of you.
Thank you so much, Scott, for coming on. We want to have you back again. We'll get this thing rolling and see how we're doing 6 months down the road.
And we
would absolutely love to, or other members of the team. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been an absolute pleasure. And again, great job on the music. Really great job, Aaron, by the way, on the page, too. I'm very, very impressed.
Good. Anything you have, send it to us. We'll post it. We are all about information. Thanks a million, you guys. Have a great one, and we hope MyVA is a giant success. You can find information at wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll see you next week.